Welcome back to another episode of CT Real Estate Radio. I am Chaz Cook, joined by Rob Wallace of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate. And here with us today is Brian Skelly from William Ravis Mortgage on the first Saturday in February. Boys, how are we doing?
Doing excellent. How are you?
Doing good.
I cannot complain. I cannot believe. Well, January seemed long. Like it kind of came out of the gates of the first 2 weeks, like blew by. And then the last 2 weeks kind of dragged on. And man, we are 1 month into 2024 and we've got a lot to talk about today.
I feel like we have not seen the sun in a month. So
it's supposed to come out later on today is what I hear.
Today's going
to
be a good day.
Well, February is going to be a short month, the shortest month of the year.
And then did the groundhog see his shadow or what's up with that? Who follows Punxsutawney?
I wasn't paying attention.
Early spring. All right. So another lackluster winter here in New England, but. You know what's not lackluster is the housing market because we got some numbers to look back on in January. But before we get into all that, we have to recap the Fed meeting that happened on January 30th and 31st and what their thoughts are on inflation as well as what that did to the interest rate. So we've got an article here from nowband.com where Fed Chair Jerome Powell said, we're not targeting housing price inflation. So what exactly does that mean? But Brian, before I get into this article, Brian, why don't you give us your take on that first?
So I think what they mean by that is, you know, they don't want to be the bad guys, so they don't want to make housing more expensive for people. But their job is to get inflation under control, and kind of a byproduct of them increasing the rates and being concerned about inflation for most of 2022 is. That combined with low inventory and high demand and high interest rates, all these things have made housing a lot more expensive than it used to be. And my take is that, you know, that's not their goal. They're not really focused on that, but I could be wrong.
Well, let's see what Jerome Powell actually had to say, because during the FOMC press conference on the 31st, Jerome Powell, chairman of the Federal Reserve, directly addressed concerns related to housing price inflation and Senator Elizabeth Warren's letter to the Federal Reserve. In response to a direct question about housing inflation from Nancy Marshall Genzer with Marketplace, Powell clarified the Fed's primary objectives, repeatedly stating that their focus remains on price stability and maximum employment, not housing inflation. Now, that always kind of throws me for a loop here. And we've talked about it a couple times, because when they say unemployment was up, they actually say that's good for inflation. But now he's talking about having maximum employment with price stability. And those two things don't correlate to bringing inflation down, right?
Correct. So, I mean, recently we've been talking about the Fed's job being getting inflation under control. But the Fed basically, in the mandate when they created the Federal Reserve and they said, this is your job, they basically have two main purposes. One is to keep inflation under control. That's one job. And the other one is maximum employment. And they're kind of at odds with each other. So, you know, if you look at in the past, like during COVID or during 2008, those were times that they weren't really worried about inflation, but they were worried about unemployment. You know, after the Great Recession of 2008, unemployment got very high. I don't remember what exactly it was. I mean, it was over 10% at one point. And that's much, much higher than it is now, of course. So it's pretty low right now. So, so at times of, you know, when the economy is not doing well, they're more concerned about reducing unemployment. And then when the economy is doing a little too well, sometimes they say it's running hot, which means it's growing at a really an unhealthy pace, that's when you start to get inflation. And so, you know, I think they're reminding people, yes, we know, you know, housing has gotten more expensive, but that's not our primary concern. We are concerned about these two things, and these are our primary objectives. I think that's what they're saying.
Okay. All right. So let's see what he went on. So Powell also stated that the housing industry was helped more than any other industry at the start of the pandemic due to the lowering of interest rates. He noted that the opposite also holds true when rates rise, the housing market is impacted negatively. Okay, we're in alignment with that. You know, when you can buy a house at 2%, you know, a $400,000 house, and you're looking at like a $2,500 mortgage payment, ballpark, I'm not going to put Skelly on the spot with his calculator right there.
that helps sell some houses.
versus a 6.5% interest rate and, you know, a $3,500 a month payment. I mean, that's going to swing the pendulum definitely.
100%.
But more enduring issues, Powell stated, are centered around limited housing inventory. He expressed the issue, there hasn't been enough housing built, but not a solution. Well, we know part of the problem in building new houses is the process of going through it. I mean, we had a training here a couple of weeks ago with the team, and we had a builder on, and he is in the middle of going through a 14 unit subdivision. He is 6 months into it, and he's just getting to the point where they can have each one approved as a building lot.
Wow.
That's all the soil testing. That's even starting the conversations with the town. After that happens, then they have to go back to the town again. Everything has to get reviewed. Then they have to start pulling permits for building, making sure roads and sanitation, all those other things are taken into account.
It's a process.
He said it could potentially be another 6 to 9 months, depending on any issues they arise, right? The topography, the wetlands commission. So the results of everything that comes back when they go to make these approved building lots. And then they have to come to market.
Yeah,
right.
So he's going to be, you know, call it 15 to 18 months into this project just to get the approval.
So in a way, this is kind of like Powell saying, like, hey, this is not really my problem, not my problem, but not my job. Like, it's not my job to make sure there's enough houses for everybody in America. He's like, I'm worried about inflation and making sure people have jobs.
Right.
And if the builders and the towns are not providing, you know, an environment where they can build enough houses for everybody.
Shouldn't the Fed be helping the builders, like, or helping the towns and the states streamline this process so we can get more houses built in a timely manner rather than having to wait? Let's say he breaks ground at 15 months, then you're 6 to 9 months to build a house. So he's 24 months into this project before one house is done.
Yeah.
I would say that's not, I mean, it's not the Federal Reserve's job. You know, I mean, his job is to make sure that a gallon of milk doesn't cost $25 when you're going to buy groceries.
And or the as lumber far as, that the builder needs
as
to build
far as
with.
Like creating housing and building, I mean, that is really in Connecticut, that's done at a local zoning level. I mean, that's there's a lot of different branches of government. And then you have the whole HUD, Department of Housing and Urban Development,
right,
which is in a huge branch of the government whose entire job is focused on housing. So the Federal Reserve's like, you know, this is somebody else's primary objective, is not mine.
So we need to find out who our local Connecticut representative is, who we can get on the show here and ask them some burning questions about building in the state of Connecticut here.
I agree.
As well as the country, right? Put them in the hot seat. The country is down in new construction. Connecticut is lagging even farther behind with that, as we've continued to see with our inventory being the lowest inventory in the country for the last couple of months, which we're going to dive into a little bit deeper when we look back at the first month, January of 2024, and kind of see what those numbers look like. But just to kind of wrap up the recap of the Fed meeting here, the final point in his response to Marshall Genzer's question was regarding rental inflation, which does come into play in the Fed's work of lowering inflation overall. Powell stated that by looking at owner's equivalent rent and actual rent paid by tenants, PCE calculations show that market rents are flattening, and that will show up in inflation over time. So, all right, that's good news. Rents are flattening, but, you know, we do have one sector of housing which is on the rise, and we're going to tell you all about that when we come back on CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. We are back on CT Real Estate Radio. Chas Cook and Rob Wallace of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate, joined with Brian Skelly, who just put himself on the hot seat at the break here. He did some miscalculations of his numbers that he's going to bring us in regards to interest rates. And Brian, tell us what happened to close out yesterday.
Yeah, so Friday was interesting. We were starting to see a little bit of improvement in rates Friday morning to end the week. But then the jobs report came out stronger than expected, significantly stronger than expected. And again, we were talking before the break about how the Federal Reserve's worried about jobs and inflation. 353,000 new jobs created in January. Report just came out on Friday. Almost double the expected 185. Just to give you a little perspective, in November, there was 182,000 new jobs. In October, it was 165,000 new jobs. So business is booming in the USA. It's a good time. I mean, I think a lot of people didn't expect things to go as well as they're going. I mean, we're seeing inflation numbers are looking good, and we're seeing job numbers are looking good. So, like, the Federal Reserve's got to be pretty happy about this. So, you know, again, high levels of new jobs is typically not good for inflation, because if there's very low unemployment, companies have to pay more money to get new workers, and that contributes to inflation. But overall, we're seeing things are looking good, and I think the Fed's pretty comfortable with where things are at. And so, you know, definitely rate cuts for later in 2024 are on the table.
But what you say, this week we potentially had some ebbs and flows in the interest rates, going from 6.6 to 6.9, and then applications were also down this week. over last week and then over the year before. I believe it was 20% over last year and 11% week over week were the numbers on that. Did you feel that, or did you notice either earlier in the week it was a little busier, and as rates kind of crept up, it got a little slower?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, from my personal experience, I was very busy in the first half of January with so the term application is interesting. So in the mortgage world, typically when we say an application, we're referring to somebody who has a property under contract and is submitting an application on a specific property.
Right. So different than a pre-approval or a pre-qualification. Yeah. Got it.
So, you know, you have people that are calling to get pre-approved are technically filling out an application, but just to clarify the lingo, an application is usually a triggered loan that where we put the address in, like, okay, these people have a house, we're doing the loan. So what I saw was in the third week, in the first half of January, most of my buyers were getting their offers accepted. Mm-hmm. And then the number of pre-approvals went up a lot. So a lot more people were getting pre-approved in January than they were in December and November. And then I started, you know, seeing a little reminiscent activity similar to 2023, which is a lot of people pre-approved, a lot of people looking for houses, not a lot of people getting their offer accepted just because there's so few houses. So I wonder if that applications being down may not be an exact representation of how much demand there is, because if people are making bids and they're not getting the offer accepted, they can't proceed with an official application. So again, I think a lot of the inventory got bought up, and that's going to impact how many people can actually get a mortgage, because you got to get your offer accepted in order to get a mortgage.
And Rob, does that correlate with what you're seeing out there in the market right now?
Yeah, it really does. Multiple offers going in. So it was slow at the beginning, but it's starting to pick up now, especially when interest rates dropped a little bit from 8% down to 6. It's making a lot of offers. Some are going to accept it, a lot are not. So,
yeah, I know it was, you're right. Cause even around here in the office, like the phones were a little quiet the first couple of weeks of January. They've mm-hmm. since picked up. So I think a lot of people were gearing up, getting ready to go. Or what we've continued to see is that people think they're waiting for this golden opportunity, when we were saying at the end of December, like, when January 1 hits, now's a great time to buy a house. You're going to get a deal.
Right.
People, the winter has stayed mild, right? People are starting to get that little bit of stir crazy. They've had 3 weeks of being inside after the holidays. They're starting to think about that bigger house or just making a move. They're tired of renting, whatever the case may be. And so they're back in the market. One of our agents submitted an offer. I can tell you two different stories about two different agents. One submitted an offer and she got a text back from the listing agent and said, "You were one of 14 offers. I'm sorry, yours did not get selected." Wow. 14 offers on one property in the middle of January in Connecticut is absurd.
I just had that one over the weekend, or actually over the week. They had 19 offers and 69 showings.
19 offers and 69 showings. And then, yeah, another agent wrote an offer on a condo, great, strong offer. I mean, they decided to waive all their contingencies. They went $20,000 over and were willing to cover an appraisal gap, meaning if it came in less than what they were offering to purchase it for, they were covered up to $10,000. They were third place.
Wow.
Yeah. So I mean, we're back to the competitive environment. I think I saw a lot of people did take advantage. I was busier than usual in December and the first half of January.
Right.
And it was kind of refreshing. People were making an offer, getting accepted, but we're getting back to one of 14. Oh my gosh.
One of 14, one of 19. I mean, 69 showings in a 3-day stretch.
I feel for these people that are trying to get a house right now.
Reminds me back when the pandemic did hit and we had that huge influx in buyers and very little listings. I did an $80,000 over asking offer for a client and we lost.
Wow.
80,000.
80,000 over. It was over a million, but it was a big price point. But
it's insane. When you're thinking about that type of money, some people, that's for a $400,000 house, it's a 20% down payment.
Right. Exactly.
And they're not even in the mix. I did see that last spring. I had clients bid on a house. It was listed for 1.1. My clients bid 1.25. The house sold for 1.7.
Wow.
So that, I mean, it just goes to show that, and that was before rates got really crazy and mm-hmm. they were a cash buyer. But now, you know, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more, but some of those luxury properties, I thought they were slowing down because everyone was putting their money into a CD or to a high earning savings account with an interest mm-hmm. rate, you know, 5% on $1 million, lock that up, right? It's not too bad.
Right.
But that's not what the data is showing us. The data is actually showing us that the luxury market has continued to go up, which is just crazy to me. So we're going to cover that. But first, we got to make sure we let you guys know about the Home and Garden Show at Mohegan Sun coming up February 15th through 18th, 16th through 18th, I apologize. And I just learned this today, actually. The Home and Garden Show at Mohegan Sun is now the largest in New England. And we are going to be there representing Service Station Equipment and, of course, CT Real Estate Radio. We're going to be in the Service Station Equipment booth on Saturday. I hear we might even be doing the show live from there, but we'll definitely be there hanging out. TBD, Cooper, that's on you. Going to put you on the hot seat now. If our producer can get everything set up, we will be live there with you guys.
The man behind the microphones.
That's right. The 43rd annual Home and Garden Show put on by Jinx Production will be at the Earth Tower Expo and Convention Center at Mohegan Sun. We will be in the Service Station Equipment booth. Right when you walk in on the right-hand side, you'll see the Irish Springs pool truck, that big silver, beautiful truck. Dougie Braun, the tank man, will be there. Hopefully Martin McKinney will be there with us as well. And we are very excited for that. We're going to keep bringing you guys some info on that. We might. Oh, look at this. I just saw a special appearance by none other than Ty Pennington. You guys know Ty Pennington?
Oh, yeah. I remember Ty. Home makeover guy.
Extreme Home Makeover. Yeah. Move that bus, right?
That was like one of the first. That was one of the first shows of that genre. Yeah.
So he's going to be there. It doesn't say when he will be there, but if we can get the insider scoop and share that with you guys, because I'm sure there is a couple Extreme Home Makeover fans out there who would like to meet Ty Pennington.
Chipper fella.
Very chipper. Lots of energy, like somebody else I know. But anyways, so luxury prices. Rob, you do a fair amount in the luxury market. We're going to call it luxury in Connecticut. We'll call it $800,000 and up.
I can agree with that.
Right. Are you seeing properties listed in that range going over asking in the last 4 to 6 months, or have you kind of seen them at asking or slightly under?
For 800 and up, I've probably seen very little go over asking. Mm-hmm. 4 to 6 months ago, now I'm starting to see them go a little bit over.
Got it. Yeah, so this Redfin reports luxury home prices hit all-time high as record share of high-end buyers pay cash. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point, and we're going to get to an article that covers that about, you know, who are these high-end buyers who are paying cash. We've got some insight there for you, but first let's kind of break this down. The typical U.S. luxury home sold for a record $1.17 million in the fourth quarter, up 8.8% from a year earlier, according to a new report from Redfin. That is a big number, 1.17 to be up 8.8%.
It really is.
Prices of non-luxury homes increased at half the pace, rising 4.6% year over year to a record $340,000. So that's the median sales price across the entire United States. We know here in Connecticut, we're basically at $400,000, $398,000, or maybe up. Again, we'll look at those January numbers. But this is according to an analyst that divided all U.S. residential properties into tiers based on Redfin estimates of the home's market values as of January 2024. Redfin report defines luxury. Redfin's report, like, it's just too many R's for me today. Defines luxury homes as those estimated to be in the top 5% of their respective metro area based on market value, and non-luxury homes as those estimated to be in the 35th to 65th percentile based on market value. So that's why for Connecticut, I went that 800 and up, because, you know, we have Fairfield County. We've got some areas where you'll see a lot of million, where the average price point is over $1 million. Right. But for most of the other counties in Connecticut, it's in the 450 range. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's always going to be your outliers, especially here on the shoreline. You'll see some $1 million waterfront properties.
Exactly.
Brian, what are you seeing for luxury homes? Are you getting a lot of mortgage applications? They would be jumbo loan applications, I guess.
Well, it's interesting. They've increased the jumbo loan limits quite a bit. I mean, you know, 5 years ago, the jumbo loan limit was, maybe it was more than that, man, I'm getting old. But it was not that long ago.
Hey, you're not old. Remember, we just figured out that we're the same age here. Yes, by the way, happy belated birthday to Brian Scalia.
Thank you.
This past Thursday. So
it was. So in like 2015, for example, I believe the jumbo loan limit was $417,000 for like 10 years from like 2008 to, I'm going from memory here, but to like 2018 or something like that, it was $417,000. And then since then, over the last 5 years or so, they've been every year increasing the jumbo loan limit in relation to home prices going up. And this year, they just increased it to 766. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for example, I have a loan I'm doing right now, gentleman buying a $1.6 million home in Florida. He put 50% down. His loan amount's 750 and it's not a jumbo loan.
Wow.
So not seeing as many jumbo loans as I used to. Because you can go all the way up to $766,000,
right?
And you know, and that's a pretty big payment on a $750,000 loan at, you know, a rate in the sixes. So,
oh, quick math. What do you got? Ballpark, principal and interest. We're going to give him a second.
Figure it out.
I'm going to give him a quick second here, 'cause I want to share this stat with you guys while I put Brian on the hot seat with the math here. So a record high share of all cash luxury home purchases drove the relative strength of the high end housing market. Nearly half, 46.5% of the fourth quarter's luxury purchases were made in cash, up from 40% a year earlier. And we're going to get Brian the break to do his little math here, because that's where we are headed when we come back on CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. Chaz Cook and Rob Wallace of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate, joined by Brian Skelly from William Ravis Mortgage, back here with you on CT Real Estate Radio. And right before we went to break, we put Brian Skelly on the hot seat to crunch some numbers in a pinch here. So we're talking about a $750,000 mortgage. We closed out the week with rates right around 6.9%, we're going to call it. So without taxes and insurance, what are they looking at for just the principal and interest on a monthly payment?
So it's just under $5,000, about $49.39.
Okay.
And then, you know, on a home in that price range, taxes might be maybe $1,200, and then insurance is maybe $300.
So you're thinking about $24,000 a year? I was going to say $18,000 to $20,000.
Yeah, it's in that ballpark. So I mean, you're easily looking at, you know, close to $7,000 a month.
Whew.
And there are folks out there that can afford that. But also, people, even if you can afford that, you prefer a smaller payment than a bigger payment. So, you know, we are seeing people that are buying $1 million houses are more inclined to put more money down, keep the payment a little bit more manageable, and therefore less jumbo loans than there used to be.
Right. And a lot of people paying cash, which we're going to get back to. But first, we have to bring you this week's One Team Weekly Rewind, brought to you by Service Station Equipment. You know what's not going to cost you $7,000 a month? To get your oil tank replaced by Dougie Brown, the Tank Man. All you have to do is call him at 1-800-801-TANK. He might cost you $750 and a slice of pizza for him to come over there, get the permit, remove it, clean it up, put a new one in, do the whole job. But it's not going to be $7,500 a month, that's for sure. So you make sure you tune, reach out to Service Station Equipment for all your residential tanking needs, 1-800-801-TANK. And in just a couple of months, I can't wait to start talking about the Irish Springs pool water again when it's time to open up those pools and get them filled up for the spring summer season. But what did we do here in the last 7 days on the One Team? We brought you one new listing, 5 under contracts, and 8 closings, as well as one coming soon. Our one new listing for the week is 9 Village Street in Manchester, Connecticut. Sorry, I couldn't get my words out there. Just stumbling across them. This is a Claire Emerson listing. I got to give a big shout out to Claire. She's doing a stellar job at reaching out to her sphere, getting to know what their needs are, helping them sell properties. She's been on the team just about a year now, so she's really starting to excel. This is her 4th listing in the last 6 months. So big shout out to Claire on that one, especially because this one hit the market at $285,000, 4 bedrooms, 2 baths, just over 1,800 square feet, and built in 1895. It is a charming 4-bedroom, 2-bath colonial with timeless appeal and modern comforts. As you approach the front 3-season porch, it invites you to relax and enjoy the neighborhood ambiance. Step inside where the living room den welcomes you with hardwood floors and a bay window that bathes the space in natural light. And Denise, our listing coordinator who does these write-ups, stellar job. I mean, I couldn't have written
She's
that.
She's amazing.
Amazing.
I love Denise.
Couldn't do that any better myself.
Yes.
But if you would like to check out 9 Village Street in Manchester on the market for $285,000, you can reach out to Claire at oneteamct.com. All right. Under contracts, 5 of those bad boys. We had under contracts in Milford, Wolcott, Madison, New Haven, and Manchester. Closings, 8 of those. Congratulations to our buyers, sellers, and investors. We had closings in Waterford. Rob, that's one for you. Middletown, Old Saybrook, Guildford, Wallingford, Manchester, Brantford, and Southbury. All right, open houses. We've got 2 this weekend. We've got 1 going on today, Saturday, February the 3rd. 13 Thompson Ave in Putnam, Connecticut is happening right now in the middle of the show. It started at 11 a.m. and it will run until 1 p.m. So you can head over there and check that out. That is 13 Thompson Ave in Putnam, Connecticut. And going on tomorrow, Sunday, February the 4th, Of course, the opportunity to head to the residences at 66 High Street and check out the award-winning buildings. The final building of that project is available. There are a number of units at various price points. You can head over there from 12 to 2 p.m. Again, that is 66 High Street in Guilford, Connecticut. And that is going to wrap up this week's One Team Weekly Rewind, brought to you by Service Station Equipment. All right, gents, so we know that the luxury home price is hitting all-time high. Cash purchases of luxury properties hit an all-time high, 46.5% up from 40% a year earlier.
Now, I know we touched on this a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. Are you seeing an before we weren't seeing an influx in our area?
In our
area.
Are
you now seeing one?
Not in the luxury. No. In cash buyers, yes. Mm-hmm. I have definitely seen an
That's
influx.
That's what I meant to say.
Oh, yeah. In cash buyers. Absolutely. And I can give you a little hint here as to who
I am as well.
We've hinted at this for a few weeks, but this CT Insider article actually outlines it. It's the boomers.
Yes.
The boomers are coming with pocket full of cash, mm-hmm. right? They're coming in and they're saying either they've saved a lot of money, right? Or they've done really well in the stock market, or they're pulling the equity out of their homes and they're just walking in and say, oh, all right, I'm ready to make a move. Here you go.
Yeah.
And for an FHA buyer with 3.5% down who's trying to compete, you're not going to win a lot.
It's tough.
Yeah. The other problem is that, and this article talk a little bit more that it's the boomers, they're not really... They're buying new properties, but they're probably buying that second property. We're talking about the young boomer population. So they're thinking of that Florida home or maybe the home on the shoreline if they live up in like Hartford and they want somewhere in like, say, Guilford, where we are, or Old Lyme. So they aren't downsizing and they're buying up additional inventory, which is blocking the way of millennial homebuyers. Brian, are you noticing that trend too? I mean, I'm sure most of your applications are.
The wheels are turning my head as you're saying that. I was thinking about. You know, I've talked to a couple, you know, like financial advisor friends of mine, and, you know, I'm not a financial advisor, but I kind of live in that world a little bit. And one of the things that I've heard people say is that when you kind of get to that stage in life, and I'm not there yet, but, you know, folks that are kind of later in life like to have a safe place where they can put their money and get a reasonable rate of return. Mm-hmm. Like if they can put their money in a CD at 5%, they're happy. Like right. They're not going to, you know, they're not wanting the stock market. We're going to lose the money. So, you know, if you think about somebody who's got $500,000 in cash, either because they saved it or because they sold a house and they got a big check, you know, what's the equivalent of putting money in a CD at 5%? Well, not taking out a mortgage at 8% or 7% mm-hmm. is kind of very similar to just right. having your money in a safe place. So I think that's kind of how they're looking at it. And yeah, 100%. I mean, I don't see it because those people that don't need a mortgage, they don't call me. But
right. My
folks that do need a mortgage, they tell me about how they didn't get the house because one of these cash buyers came. And, you know, I see some of the, you know, reports that are going on about, you know, what percentage of the buyers are getting loans. And I mean, it's a lot of people paying cash.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, especially in the New Haven metro area, it has slightly more boomers than millennials who are 26 to 41 years old, but empty nesters. And so this is where they kind of break off from the boomer category. People 58 to 76 years old who live in one or two bedroom households with no minor children of their own owned over 29% of houses with three or more bedrooms in 2022. That's a really interesting stat to me. A study found while millennials with minor children owned just under 12% of homes in the New Haven metro area. That's a, you know, call it a 100% discrepancy right there. And that gap is larger than national average, according to Redfin. The portrait is similar in other large Connecticut metro areas analyzed by Redfin. For the metro area around Bridgeport, the state's largest city, empty nesters owned just over 26% of large homes, while millennials with children owned only about 13%. So again, a 100% markup. And in the Hartford metro area, the capital, empty nesters owned over 27%, while millennials with children owned only almost 15%. So closing the gap a little bit there as we get up into the Hartford area. But nationally, Redfin found that empty nesters owned about 28% of large homes, while millennials with children owned about 14%. So we're not too far off here in Connecticut, which is good because, like we've been mentioning, right, our inventory, our new construction, everything, we've always kind of been lagging behind the rest of us. But at least in this regard, between the boomers and the empty nesters, we're kind of holding our own and who owns how much of what. But that still doesn't take away that the boomers hold 1/7 of the world's wealth, and I believe it's 40% of the wealth in the United States alone. So a staggering number and a staggering amount of cash. And to Brian's mm-hmm. point, a safe place to put it is in a $400,000 or $500,000 house, knowing that it's going to continue to appreciate for at least 24 to 36 months. That's my opinion on how long it would take us to get back to healthy inventory levels, barring any kind of catastrophe.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so it's not going to be a quick uphill battle.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But they just close it out with, there was nowhere in the country where empty nesters owned less than 20% of large homes, or where millennials with children owned more than 18%, according to Redfin's analysis. So I'm going to continue to monitor this. I'm going to subscribe to this here and see if we can get updates maybe on a quarterly basis and see as the seasons go, maybe that trend changes a little bit, or as rates continue to come down, maybe we see some of those first-time homebuyers come up. But when we come back, we're going to tell you about some things to do here in February, some food-related things, and maybe touch on some market stats for the state of Connecticut on CT Real Estate Radio and 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. Welcome back to CT Real Estate Radio. Chaz Cook and Rob Wallace of the One Team at William Ravis here with Brian Skelly, and we're breaking down what is happening in the luxury market, what is happening with the boomers, what the Fed was saying this week. I mean, we're just running through it all. But we keep finding our way back to the 43rd Annual Home and Garden Show by Jenks Productions at Mohegan Sun coming up February 16th through the 18th. Like I said, we're going to be there in the service station equipment booth right on the right-hand side, right when you walk in. But I mean, 43 years. Have you guys, let's see, have you been? It's been 43 years. We've been on this planet for almost as long as this show has been going on. Have you guys been to the home show before?
Negative.
Never been.
Oh, all right. So first timers, so you guys have no idea that you're going to go to the largest home show in New England. They've got styles and prices for every taste and budget. They've got free parking. And unless you want to go valet, then you got to pay. That's just the casino.
Byron's been trying to get me to go for years. I'm always
there's going to be builders, remodelers, designers, and contractors. It's one of our best regional home shows with a wide array of home care products and services, a wide array of gardening and lawn care vendors. Skelly, you got Skelly's Garden at your house. You've got the greenhouse here at the One Team office. Uh-oh. And you've never been to the gardening and lawn care vendor offerings at the home show.
I have been to some garden shows, but I don't know. Does that count? I have been to some garden shows.
No, you have to be to this garden show because this is now the largest in New England.
All right.
Like, they're going to have over 20,000 people in attendance.
I might be able to buy some heirloom seeds for some tomatoes or something.
Maybe you could attend one of their talks. We've got Nature's Pharmacy going on Friday night from 6 to 7:30. Let's see what's going on Saturday when we're going to be there. Intro to composting.
Mm.
You much of a composter?
A little bit. It's a lot of work turning over the compost. Yeah. I compost, but I don't reuse it. I just let it sit in the compost pile.
I tried it and I'm not successful.
Yeah, me either.
I buy compost.
That's easier.
Van Wildren's is the best compost.
This one will be going on right when we end the show there, the Healing Harvest. You plant water, fertilizer, and weed, and oh, those never-ending weeds, visions of delectable salads dance in your head, but more is growing in your garden than delicious, nutritious foods to eat. There's a natural pharmacy out there. Master herbalist Andrea Candy, author of the award-winning Gentle Healing for Baby and Child, instructor for the New York Botanical Gardens, will be there speaking. So maybe that one. Or do you do roses, Skelly? You got roses in Skelly's garden?
I have roses, yeah.
All right. Well, do you know how to select sustainable roses?
I just grow whatever ones came with the house.
So that's going on Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. if you want to check that out. Heirloom and specialty tomatoes? What are you, just regular vine tomato, or do you do some heirlooms?
I do the tomatoes. I do the hybrid. Heirloom basically means that it's like the original variety that hasn't been like mixed with another one. But so I do a little bit of both. The heirlooms typically are the ugly tomatoes, but they taste the best. And then I do some of the hybrids, the little cherry tomatoes. Those are typically not heirlooms, nice. But we like the little.
I'm coming
my wife
over.
Likes the yellow ones or the purple ones.
Yeah, we the purple ones tomatoes. Are the best. Yeah. And the cherries are my wife's favorite, so I'm coming over to rob some.
Okay, actually, there's a surplus. A lot of them go to the crows and the worms. So
you're gonna want to check this one out though, because it sounds, if you have a surplus, Corey Fink, Seed Saving Basics: How to Successfully Save Seeds from Common Vegetable Varieties. So you can save those tomato seeds and plant more tomatoes.
Yeah, in my free time.
Your free time.
Creating my own
in between
tomato
doing
seeds.
Mortgages. So, I mean, the list just goes on and on. I was just running through some of the Saturday events. They've got some Friday night. It's obviously going on Sunday. We're going to be there Saturday hanging out for a few hours, again, in the service station equipment booth with Dougie Brown, the Tank Man, Martin McKinney. But that's just one weekend in February. That is the 16th, 17th, and 18th, the 43rd Annual Home and Garden Show at Mohegan Sun. But we've got 10 other things that you can do in the month of February here in Connecticut that are also, well, I guess, home and garden. We were talking about vegetables, so these are food-related things here. I'm curious because I don't think I've been to any of these places. This is a CT Insider article. 10 plus things for Connecticut food lovers to do in February. I don't think I've been to any of these places, so I'm going to be curious to see if you guys have. First up on the list is Taste of Ridgefield in Ridgefield.
I've been to Ridgefield, but I've never been here.
So Taste of Ridgefield is a gathering at the Parks and Recs to offer samples of their food. Participating restaurants include the Benjamin, Tequila Escape, and Brasserie St. Germain. Taste of Ridgefield is a fundraiser for the Ridgefield Rotary. Tickets are only $50. Sessions are 11 to 1 and 3 to 5. So hopefully it's a lot of food for a two-hour, $50 stretch. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
But Ridgefield's a little far out of my way. If you're down in that area, definitely check it out. You've got Surf and Turf featuring the Brignole Vineyards in Canton, Connecticut. That's next up on the list. Sur La Table in the Shops of Farmington Valley is hosting a series of cooking classes. Oh, I like this. With East Granby-based Brignole Vineyards. Surf and Turf on February 5th is the first hands-on class. Will show guests how to make delicious like New York strip steak and olive oil panna cotta. What's panna cotta? P-A-N-N-A-C-O-T-T-A.
I don't know, but the steak sounds good.
Sounds familiar.
No, students will also get red or white wine from the vineyard. That's what, there we go. All right, okay. Sign me up for that one. That is Surf and Turf featuring the Brignole Vineyards. I don't know if I'm saying that right or not. Next up, we've got 16th Bubbles and Truffles in Winsted. 16th, it didn't say 16th annual. Okay, now in its 16th year, this wine, beer, tasting, and chocolate extravaganza on February 9th will be held at the Little Red Barn Brewers. In addition to wine, beer, and chocolate, it features live music, a raffle, and a silent auction. Proceeds benefit Friends of Main Street. So that's not bad. Tickets are, all right. Oh, okay, they must be passing on the fees. I was like, tickets are $28.52 via Eventbrite. And I don't know if you guys have ever used Eventbrite, little sidebar here. You can choose to absorb the fees or you can choose to pass them on. And for $28.52, I'm pretty sure they're passing that on.
Interesting.
Yeah. Always absorb it. It's a couple bucks, maybe buck and a quarter, $1.50.
Not bad.
You know, if you're trying to put on an event and bring some people to it, you know, you can absorb the little bit of money there. But next up, we've got Savor the Symphony Beer and Paired Food Dinner in Middlebury. All right, so Middletown, this one's close to us. We can probably make this one. Pies and Pubs. All right, now they got my attention. Is teaming up with Kent Falls Brewing, another great beer, for this February 10th beer pairing dinner. Guests will get a four-course meal, and each course will be paired with a different Kent Falls beer.
Ooh.
Tickets are only $59 plus tax and tip. That's a good deal right there. Four courses, four different beers. For $59 in
good.
Middlebury, Savor the Symphony, beer and paired food dinner. All right, here we go. I think we should do this as like a one team field trip here. Making mozzarella fundraiser with the Jurassic Brothers in Stanford, Connecticut.
That'll be fun.
Can you imagine? Like, we take 45 agents in there and like we're here to learn how to make mozzarella. We've got some characters on the team. I don't know how that would play out. Cooper, you're going to have to be there with the camera getting all the outtakes because that would be a wild experience. And maybe, you know, so what we can do is we can go learn how to make mozzarella on February 10th and then we can head to that Pies and Pubs beer dinner. How's that sound?
Let's do it.
All right. So this is a class at T's Wine Bar and Kitchen. Guess we'll learn how to make mozzarella, plus get a cocktail and antipasti. All right, so we'll kind of, I guess, pregame, right? Have a cocktail and some antipasti, and then go to a four-course meal. Leading the class are the Dressy Brothers of the Italian Kitchen in Fairfield. Class starts at 11 a.m., and tickets are only $35 available on Eventbrite. See, that's one of those nice flat numbers right there. They're probably absorbing those fees, like I mentioned. All right, Lunar New Year Dim Sum Brunch in Greenwich. Lunar New Year begins February 10th. Man, February 10th is the day to be out like eating food here in the state of Connecticut.
Definitely.
This one is February 10th and on February 11th, Molly Restaurant in Greenwich will celebrate the start of the Year of the Dragon. The restaurant will host a lion dance performance at 1 p.m. Molly will also reveal a new dim sum brunch menu on this day. All right. I'm always a big fan of brunch.
Me too.
Oh, here we go. We're getting even closer to home. Pizza in New Haven, History Explored in Brantford, Connecticut. All right, Brian, you're from Brantford. Where do you think that they're doing this?
I once Googled pizzas in Brantford. I think there was over 30 pizza places in Brantford.
There's 30 pizza places in Brantford?
Over 30.
Over 30.
Yeah.
What's your favorite?
Well,
back on the hot seat.
Typically, I'm going to go with Indian Neck Pizza. It's my local joint right near my house. Yeah. It's really good. Clams Casino. Yeah.
Rob, what do you guys have up in Griswold for pizza? You got good pizza up there?
Yeah, we got some good spots. I mean, I like Green Onion. I go by there. But
oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't really... I don't know. I don't really eat our pizza too much, but I really love Frank Pepe's. I go to New Haven all the time for it.
Okay.
I think we have some of the best pizzas.
We do.
In Connecticut, I think we do.
We missed you a couple weeks back. We did the top-rated pizza places in Connecticut, and I said, you know, we need to just pick a couple Saturdays and just do a couple, you know, three or four at a clip here and just record it and, you know, talk to the restaurants and see how they're doing.
I got an idea. You're going to like this. So my brother, when he first started dating his wife, well, now they're married, but they were dating at one point, they wrote down all the pizza places within 25 miles on little slips of piece of paper, and they put it in a big glass jar.
Oh, I love it.
And when they was like on Saturdays, they would reach in and pull out a piece of paper, and whatever the name of the pizza place was, they'd go there for pizza.
Oh, that's a good
idea.
They
did it like once a week. It was great.
That's
loved it.
Genius.
Isn't that a great idea?
I'm going to steal that it off as my own. Maybe Valentine's Day, I'm going to bring home this like giant, I'm going to bring home a pizza box.
There you go.
And have them all written inside there, folded up. And then like, so we take Mondays off together, my wife, Jill, and I. And so on Mondays, right around noon, we'll just draw a name out of there and figure out where we're going to go.
What's yours? What's your favorite pizza spot?
My favorite pizza, you know, and I'm not saying this just so I don't have to answer the question. There are too damn many for me to decide, because sometimes I like a Greek style pizza. Sometimes I like just like a Sicilian style pizza. Mm-hmm. Pasta Vest here in Guilford has a great Sicilian. I did say when we were doing the pizza conversation, you got to just go for their plain cheese.
Okay.
Pepe's is good. Sally's is good.
Well, when we're at our convention a couple weeks from now,
we're going to hit the Pepe's at Mohegan Sun. Yes. We're going to hit the Pepe's at Mohegan Sun there. They may have closed that one, though. I'm not sure. I'll have to double check on that. But
I don't see
it. Okay, so it might still be there. All right. But so this is New Haven. So back to our topic at hand here after our little side rant. Pizza in New Haven, history explored. New Haven author and pizza historian Colin M. Kaplan will lead this February 11th presentation in the auditorium of the Blackstone Library.
Oh, Blackstone.
That's a great library.
Beautiful building, yeah.
Yeah. The hour-long event includes a talk by and Q&A with Kaplan, as well as the opportunity to buy one of his books, Pizza in New Haven, and have it signed. There will also be slices available on first-come, first-serve basis. So if you're on the shoreline, check that out. All right. Next up, we've got Bringing Back the Classics with Chef Ray Gennaro in New Haven. Okay, I'm not familiar with this. Michelina's on State Street is hosting this four-course meal prepared by Ray Gennaro. Dishes include artichoke mayonnaise, seafood stuffed mushrooms, and chicken piccata.
Ooh,
that sounds like a good meal. Tickets to this one, I'm going to shock you guys, they're not February 10th and 11th. They are February 25th for this dinner, and they're $72, including tax and tip. Tables of four get a free bottle of wine.
Love it.
Oh, here we go. This is where we're talking about. The 19th annual Cabin Fever Charity Chowder Cook-Off in Mystic.
Yes, we have some of the best chowder.
Yeah, this February 24th event at Old Mystic Village raises money for Always Home, an organization that helps prevent family homelessness in Eastern Connecticut. People can taste the soups on offer and vote for their favorite in four categories. It's free to walk around the event, and parking is free. Soups are $2 each or 12 for 20. That is a lot of chowders to try, 12 different chowders. There are also volunteer opportunities available. So that's going to do it. That's your top 10 food things to do here in this month of February in the state of Connecticut, as well as come see us at the 43rd annual home show. Gentlemen, any final words?
Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy that sun.
Thanks for tuning in.
Stay classy, San Diego. We will catch you guys next week with a fresh new episode of CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk.